Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, O Sarup Damodar Goswami and Ramananda Roy, hear from me the symptom of how one should chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to awaken very easily one's dormant love for Krishna. And we can chant it together. Tinatapi sunichena tarorapi sahisnuna amanina manadena kirtanya sadahari. One who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, but is always prepared to give all respects to others, can very easily chant the holy name of the Lord. Uttamahaya apanake mane trinadam dui prakare sahisnuta kare vrikshasam. These are the symptoms of one who chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Although he's very exalted, he thinks himself lower than the grass on the ground, and like a tree, he tolerates everything in two ways. Vriksha jena katilena kichuna balaya shukana maileya kore pani namagaya. When a tree is cut down, it does not protest, and even when drying up, it doesn't ask anyone for water. Jeje magaya tare deya apanidana garma vristi sahe anera karaya raksana. The tree delivers its fruits, flowers, and whatever else it possesses to anyone and everyone. It tolerates scorching heat and torrents of rain, yet it still gives shelter to others. Uttamahaya Vaishnavhava Nirabhiman Jiva Saman Jiva Jani Krishna Adhisthan. Although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, he is prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone to be the resting place of Krishna. E mate hoye ye Krishna namalaya Shri Krishna charane tare prema upajaya. If one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. As Lord Chaitanya spoke in this way, his humility increased and he began praying to Krishna that he could discharge pure devotional service. Humility is a very difficult topic because we don't have it. So then we can speak about it theoretically, we can think about it, but ultimately our humility falls short. One thought I had on humility just now, as we were reading about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is that humility has no limit. So there's never a point where one stops. One can always go further. And, you know, one who is thoroughly humble is most appreciated. We see, of course, the brothers Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, who, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Ramakeli, while they were still engaged in the service of the government and were ministers, at that time, these two brothers, they met Lord Chaitanya incognito. Living practically in royalty. They were wearing royal dress. They were living in palaces. They were living very opulent, being carried around from their palace to the court of the king in a palanquin. And like this, they were living in a very aristocratic way, but they came to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the clothes of common men, sort of in disguise, incognito, and then they surrendered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they explained that that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was known as Patitapavan, as the one who is giving the mercy to the most fallen. And then they explained, we are the most fallen because we are more sinful than Jagai and Madai. Because Jagai and Madai, they were sinful by themselves, but we as ministers are protecting many Jagais and Madais. So actually millions of Jagais and Madais are living a sinful life because we're protecting them. Therefore we're a million times more sinful than Jagai and Madai. Therefore we are the most fallen, and therefore our claim to your mercy is first. They were ministers after all. They were intelligent and also knew the ways of diplomacy. But their humility was not a ploy. It was not an external arrangement. Their humility was genuine. We see that Sanatan Goswami is described later while being in Jagannath Puri and being called by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at noon. And he took the road over the beach instead of the main road past the temple. And he walked over the hot sand and burned his feet and came before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you came over the beach, but how could you come over the sand? It's incredibly hot in the middle of the day. And how can you walk across without shoes? I mean, your feet must have been burnt. And Sanatana Goswami said, no, it was all right. I mean, I didn't feel anything. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked at his feet and they were all blistered. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked again, why didn't you go over the main road past the temple? And then Sanatana Goswami said, no, I can't go there because the pujaris are walking there. And if I touch the body of the pujaris, that would be a great offense to Lord Jagannath because I'm very fallen. So that was... At that point, Sanatana Goswami showed so much humility, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu basically asked him to stop it. He said, I cannot tolerate this any longer. This is too much. This humility is too much. But humility is the quality that can purchase Krishna's mercy. Then we see again, somewhat later, we see a situation where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all his associates are in Jagannath Puri, and at that time Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is receiving Haridas Thakur and Sanatana Goswami, and both are very humble, and he invites them to sit with the Vaishnavas, who are all on a raised platform, seated on a raised platform. But although they were personally invited by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, please come and sit with us, they said, no, we cannot do that because we are fallen. We're very fallen. And the reason why they said so is because although they were transcendental personalities, they never forgot their previous situation. Haridas, considering I took a very low birth in a low family, and Sanatana Goswami, I fell to a very low position, becoming the minister of a very low regime. Therefore, I'm also the most fallen. So that's interesting, and I feel a little relevant for us because many of us also have a fallen past, and we can remember our fallen past. We see that they did not at one point forgot that fallen past. Although they may have been transcendental at one stage, they never themselves, others may have considered them transcendental, but they did not consider themselves transcendental. This fly is very determined. With humility, I like to connect the quality of honesty to humility. The point is that humility is not something artificial. It's not like... For the Western mind, humility is something a little strange, right? Because we are not so humble in our cultures. In Asia, people are more trained to be humble. Not only in India, but also in other Asian cultures, there's more a tradition of being humble. I used to read stories about Chinese and who would call themselves this insignificant worm. And I was thinking, how can any human being call himself an insignificant worm, you know? I mean, nowadays I begin to appreciate it, you know? I think that's nice, actually. Insignificant worm, how cultural. Now you begin to see the value of that. But before Krishna consciousness, I couldn't figure that out. I mean, what is the psychology of someone who calls himself an insignificant worm? It went over my head. I couldn't figure it out. Why in the world would anyone call himself an insignificant worm? Of course, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami takes it a step further and says that not only is he an insignificant worm, he's an insignificant worm in stool, right? And just by seeing him, anyone loses all his pious credits, right? That is what he's saying. But also devotees have raised the question from, how can we, if I see myself as the most fallen, then I lose all sense of self-esteem. Yeah. So how is that? It is said that devotees, although they see themselves as the most fallen, still they're not losing their self-esteem. That is coming out in these prayers of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who says, I'm lower than a worm in stool. Anybody, that's the first verse. Second verse is, anybody who comes in contact with me loses all his pious credits. And then the third verse is, how amazing it is that a person like me has received the mercy of Nityananda. And that changes everything, right? Then, okay, you can be the most fallen, you can be this, but you got the mercy of Nityananda. And then you don't have to become depressed, then you don't have to think, what's the point of living? Because that makes everything worthwhile. So in that way, a Vaishnava, this is Dainya Bodhika. Dainya Bodhika is described as the mood of seeing oneself as most fallen. But Dainya Bodhika includes this element, the amazing mercy of the Lord, that even although I am so fallen, I got the mercy of the Lord. And that's a fact. No one can say he did not get the mercy of the Lord. But therefore, this mercy is causeless, because it wasn't for anything we did. For what we did, we should have burned for a long time, right? And so stoke up the fire a little more, right? Eternity is too short. It should be a bit longer. Considering, and if we even just contemplate on the sinful activities of this lifetime, then already that's enough. That's enough to remember ourselves as fallen. Just that is enough. So like that. Therefore, I feel that humility is not a sentiment, and the approach to it is not sentimental, that I'm going to try and feel really humble, and therefore a little super glue on the hands, and you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And the hands are always together, and the head is bowed a little bit down, the voice very soft spoken, and a kind of little holding back. That's not humility, that's a dramatic performance, right? That has nothing to do with humility. Srila Prabhupada said, a lamb at home and a lion on the chase, or in the community of the Vaishnavas, yes, soft and kind of holding back a bit, not pushing oneself in to the foreground, but for preaching, roar like a lion, right? And in all humility, right? So therefore, humility is not stereotype. I like to link the quality of honesty to humility, for the reason that the obvious one is that as soon as we get honest, we have to acknowledge our shortcomings, so many faults. And when we acknowledge all these faults, then automatically we can begin to develop, to change a different concept of ourselves. If you think, you know, there's nothing wrong with me, everything is wrong with them, eh? I mean, the problem is that people don't recognize my glory. Yeah? What to do? As long as we have any thoughts like that, then of course it's difficult. But if we realize we are full of fault, then it's easier. Partially, humility is a gift, just as Krishna Prem is a gift. We are simply trying to take a humble position, a humble attitude. So currently, for most of us, humility is something in cultivation. And of course, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said one must always wear this this quality around the neck. Like, in other words, it's constantly there, the meditation on humility. At the same time, although humility is so much emphasized, I mentioned yesterday that Srila Prabhupada emphasized devotional service particularly. And devotional service is our main focus. Just accept the service. Devotional service is given. One cannot fabricate devotional service. Devotional service is the property of the Vaishnavas, and the Vaishnavas give devotional service. It's like we see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu acting as a devotee, started to establish what devotional service includes at this point in time. And then the other acharyas, they expanded the facility for devotional service further, and
we see that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur tried to create a structure into devotional service, and he wrote that famous treatise on the Namahatta, on the marketplace of the holy name, and he establishes how there are different caretakers on different levels and so on, and that ultimately everyone takes a service. He himself took the service of the sweeper of the marketplace. But it is a service that is, it's there where this humility is really developing, more so than in a psychological adjustment. More so than us trying to be humble. Yes, there is Vaishnav etiquette. Okay, that was a banana tree. The whole thing in three bites. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about the taking service, and Srila Prabhupada especially engaged everyone in service and said everyone should be engaged. And that engagement, well, there it begins to happen, right? In the course of service, we have to be more tolerant than a tree, because we take responsibility for the service, and whatever comes up in the service, you have to just tolerate it and deal with it. And every service has these elements of things to tolerate. I remember cleaning the white marble floor of an entranceway to the temple, and then, you know, people kept on walking over it, so it took hours and hours. And then the garbage can had nappies in it that had been used, and God, I mean, how could anyone throw them in the garbage can? But they did, right? And then, oh God, the smelly garbage bags. Tolerance was there from the first moment, scrubbing the pots to I was here in India, in Vrindavan, and it was very nice to serve in that temple, but one had to tolerate also many things, heat and disease and all these things. And then they sent me to Australia. And next moment, I was in Australia. And it was a shock. I wouldn't call it a culture shock. It was maybe an anti-culture shock. Whatever it was, it was a shock. And one of the shocks was that this gentleman sitting there on the green bench, you know, what happened was, before I get to him, there was a temple president, and this temple president, he had paid my ticket, and there was some extra money. So I came to give him the money back, and he says, "Oh, you have some extra money, good. Buy some clothes, you know. You know, need some clothes." And he told me where to buy it, expensive shop. And then I bought the clothes, since he pushed me. And then the next day, he called me again in the office. He said, "Now how are you going to pay your debt?" I said, "Jeez, you should have told me yesterday. I would have given the money, wouldn't have bought all these clothes." Anyway, then he sent me out with this gentleman on the bench there, named Gyana Samudra. And he took me out in a van with a roll of paintings, and he threw me out in a factory area, and there was a sign, and the sign read, "Blood and Bones, $20. And I'm walking there, and he's like, "Blood and Bones, $20, what is this, right? Sort of looking over my shoulder, you know, who's blood, who's bones? And next moment I go into the first factory, and as I come in, it's a place where they're slaughtering chickens, and they're cutting the heads of the chickens, put the bodies on the conveyor belt, and I tried to sell them a painting, and they bought, and there was blood on the money. And when I walked out, there was a chicken on the outside, trying to get back in, trying to get in. I told him, run, chicken, run. And that went on for 1 month. And he never told me before. What?
It's so messy.
Nah, that was his mercy upon me. So anyway, but the point is, one has to tolerate. And so later, I met him later, and I sort of said, well, thanks for not telling me, you know, what was coming, kind of thing, right? Goes like, well, you know, it's just that to tolerate it, you know. Your Lord Chaitanya's mercy has to go out, you know. That's what you told me, right? That's all right. It's good. It was right. It was true. So much to tolerate in the course of service, and that is maybe our principal means, I think, that in this modern times that we develop humility in the course of service, and then next to it, Vaishnava etiquette must be there. Jnana Samudra Prabhu is my senior, so he was completely right, eh? Sending me in the fire. And that's how it was anyway. For others also. You wanted to say something, I thought, yeah. Honesty, yes. Yes. Tolerance to humility. Yes. Yeah. Quality, yeah, it's difficult to get a handle on it. True, tolerance also. I would say it's, yeah. I see honesty as a beginning, because, you know, I think we should understand that constitutionally we have a humble position. I mean, there are the basic defects of the living entity. Our sensual perception is limited, and so on. All these, we make mistakes. So therefore, humility seems a natural condition for us. We are not so great, and we are depending on mercy, and that becomes... Time is designed to make us humble. There's a story, and it's about a king who is seated on his throne, and he has his court pundits for his entertainment and this and that. And one day he asks the court pundit, what is the daily work of God? And the court pundit says, the creation. And then the king says, no, because the creation you do one time. So that's not the daily work. So then what's the daily work? Pandit goes, well, it's an unusual question, actually. I mean, never encountered that before. Your Majesty, I mean, I need some time to answer that question, and then I'll consult the scriptures. He got a week, but as the end of the week was approaching, he had not found any answer. So he decided to leave town because a relative had fallen ill. So he was about to leave, and then he came across one of his disciples, a simple cowherd man. And this So the coward man asked, he saw his spiritual master, offered obeisances and asked, "Oh, you are leaving?" Then the pundit told the whole story. "The king is getting a little strange these days, so better I go." And then said he, "What is the problem?" The cowherd asked. So he asked these very difficult questions. Unanswerable, yes. What is the questions that he asked? He asked, "What is the daily work of God?" Oh, the coward man said, "That's easy to answer." So finally it was agreed that the coward man would answer. So they went to the court of the king, and the pundit said, "Actually, your majesty, your question is very simple. My disciple will answer the question." So he's looking at the disciple. Is it this man, you know, who smells like cows? Yes, yes. So the coward man sat on the floor and then said, "Your majesty, please allow me to ask one question before you ask the question." Mm-hmm. And he said, the king said, "Yes." Then the cowherd said, "Is it true that one who answers the question should sit higher than the one who asked the question?" The king said, "What? You want to sit on the throne?" Then the coward man said, "Well, what do the Vedas say?" So the king came down from the throne, the coward man sat on the throne. So the king was sort of looking at the royal guards, you know, if this guy doesn't answer the question correctly, finished, right? So then as the coward man sits on the throne, he says, "Your majesty, your question is already answered." The king's blood pressure reached dangerous levels at that stage. So then coward man said, "But I'll tell you the answer anyway. The daily work of God is to elevate those who are humble and to pull down those who are proud." And that is there's truth in that story, a deep truth, that life itself is designed to make us humble and to make us bow down. We can see that old age makes you bow down, right? You know, yeah, we're slowly, with time, we bend over, you know, all of us, right? Become little diminished with time, and our pride is being destroyed. We lose all our power as the years go by. And everyone goes to that, right? So in that way, our beauty gone, our memory gone, our strength gone, our muscles gone, our everything gone, right? Voice gone, you know, fingers stiff from the arthritis. Everything goes. All the things we have, it goes with time. So there is a natural mechanism built into material nature that makes us humble. It's designed like that, and it's a little bit Purna Musik above, right? Again, a mouse. Because everyone, it starts off like a mouse, then becomes like a lion, right? And then again mouse. And this throughout my life, so many times mouse again. Right? Again a mouse. So I think you all know the story of the yogi, of the yogi and the mouse, right? But in case you don't, I'll say it really quick. Mouse went to yogi with problem cat. Mouse wanted to become cat, so be it. The cat came back to the yogi and had a problem, dog, you know, so become a dog, so be it. Dog came back with a problem, tiger, you know, so dog became tiger. Then tiger licked his lips and looked at the yogi. Yogi said, "What do you want now?" "Now I want to eat you. Purna Musik above. Be a mouse again." So that mechanism is also there. So humility is not just something to that we cultivate, it's also Krishna is doing it to us also. He is trying to make us humble, and just sometimes the thought occurred to me that by reading the scriptures I didn't learn very much, but by real life, by the school of hard knocks, right, and then with the help of the scriptures, that's how I learned more. I think so. That's like, of course, that's second class. Huh? First class, learn by hearing. Second class, learn by experience. Third class, don't learn at all. So I'm a combination of second and third, I guess, when it comes to learning. Not first class. But I don't think I'm the only one, because I think that in this age, for many of us, we have to learn through life. Other questions and comments, maybe?
Yes.
When I hear stories like the past time about Sanatana Goswami, it seems to me that humility is kind of impractical.
Impractical, huh? It's nice. Good point. Humility seems to be sometimes impractical. Why would you walk over the hot beach and burn your feet? Yeah. I mean, so that you can't walk. I think what we see in Sanatana Goswami is not just a humility, an attempt to cultivate humility. So it's not that we are all going to imitate, and from now on, devotees, we will only walk the hot path, right? The hot sand. And then we check all the feet and go, yeah, how many blisters have you got, you know? Not enough blisters. And if you don't have any blisters, that means you're in Maya. Isn't it Jnana? I don't think so. I think we are seeing here a symptom of humility and love of God. Right? So love of God is impractical, not humility. But love of God is impractical because love of God is not concerned with anything material. Love of God is just concerned with the Supreme Lord, and sometimes totally ignores the material energy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, in the mood of a devotee, was showing love of God, and he saw the Yamuna. He says, Yamuna, Krishna, Yamuna. This water has touched Krishna's lotus feet, this water. So he jumped in, and he couldn't see any reason to get out. So, you know, of course he was not human, but he would have drowned, and his servant pulled him out. So that was not practical. So love of God is not practical. Humility is practical. The finer culture of humility seems to be give all respects to others and do not claim any respect for oneself. Therefore, even if you have, in a way, you've done it, right? You know, look for to give the credit to others. Give the credit to those who helped, you know. Just somehow or other avoid taking credit and give all credit to others. That's like, for us, I think we're looking at humility in cultivation. Just like yesterday, we were discussing Chaitodarpanam Marjanam, the chanting of the holy name, and I said, well, our first objective in chanting is we're looking for purification. And then if there's anything more happening in terms of higher taste, that's extra. Right? Someone didn't like that, and later they told me on the site, They thought it was self-centered. Of course, purification to qualify for Krishna's service. Yeah, not just purification by itself. So I think humility is also for that purpose, to in cultivation. So glorify others. Don't put ourselves in the foreground unless others put us in the foreground. But for service, sometimes you have to push to the foreground, and to get mercy also sometimes. See, it's like when they handing out the mercy, you can be very humble in the back and not take it, or you can push to the front and take it. So for getting the mercy, sometimes we have to push a little bit. So when we see all these devotees pushing for the mercy, we should not stand in the back thinking they're so proud. Other feedback, as loud as you can, because the noise from the back is loud. They used to have in Germany a program where they had to, once a week in front of Prabhupada's picture, speak about the most wonderful experience in the week. Okay. In case not everyone could hear it, I'll summarize the story. But basically, Subhangi Mataji is describing that in the earlier stages in her spiritual life in Germany, in the ashram day, there was a floor, and all the devotees would sleep on the floor, the ladies would sleep on the floor, and her service was to clean the floor. And there was one devotee, one lady who was resting there. She was not well, and while she was cleaning the floor, the other lady was watching everything. And then at the end she said, "Now you have to do it again, right? Because every square meter you should take the cloth and then rinse it out in the bucket and fold it open like this, and then so in this way you have to do it again." And she surrendered to that, although her mind was objecting, and still she surrendered to it, and in that way became purified in that kind of situation. I think so many of us in service, right, like that, had to be tolerant, had to be just do it for the sake of service. You had to do. You know, I was at one point, I was the temple commander in Vrindavan, and one day it's a bigger temple, and there was the Gurukul building, and one day one door of a room flew open, and someone, a French boy, he jumped out and he goes, you think you are a big chief, you think you are a big chief, you are nothing. And I had never met him, you know. I'd never met him. A total stranger comes flying out of a room like that, right? Literally flying, and gives me like really intense. It's like, and I just stood there, and then he went away, and I stood there like, wow, what was that? And I was thinking, but was he the personified reaction of all the Vaishnav apparat that I've committed? Something like that, you know. In the course of being a temple commander, all the devotees are offended, and here's the reaction. My God. So, in the course of service, so many things to tolerate, and in tolerating, humility develops. So in that way, tolerance certainly is favorable for developing humility. Anyone else has a story to tell? Or a question?
As loud as possible.
I didn't fully get the second one, but let me start with the first, and then we'll try on the second part. The first part about Yoga Maya, whether Sanatana Goswami was covered by Yoga Maya, it is quite mysterious that great devotees see themselves as most fallen. Right? It's sort of like a puzzling thing, you know. How can Krishnadas Kaviraj see himself so low? How can Sanatana Goswami, when, or even Prabhupada, who sometimes, like for example, the famous purport in the Dhruva Maharaj pastime is that Prabhupada, there's a description how Dhruva was in a transcendental plane that had come to take him to the spiritual world. Then Dhruva is thinking, what about my mother? Next moment, he saw that his mother was also in a plane, because his mother was the one who was his Siksha Guru, who had sent him to the forest. She sent him on the path. So he said, my mother should also deserve share in the credit. And then Prabhupada writes in the purport, maybe, you know, in the same way, one day I will have one disciple who will become a pure devotee of the Lord, and he may deliver me also. Right? So then Prabhupada writes that this one, maybe I'll have one day one disciple who will become a pure devotee who will take me back to Godhead. How can Prabhupada write it? Is that, how can he write like that? Is it then Yoga Maya, or so? How can such great exalted devotees see themselves as so fallen? It's not necessarily that Yoga Maya interferes. It's just that they have very high standard. As one becomes more and more advanced, one has a higher and higher standard. Like Srimati Radharani, she, after Krishna left, she had not slept at all, not for a moment. And she said, because when I sleep, I also tend to forget Krishna. Therefore, I've given up sleeping altogether. Right? And then she says, the very fact that I didn't die when Krishna left, right, proves that I have no love at all. And that's her. So she has the highest standard, you know what I mean? She has such a high standard of what bhakti is that she says, and then she sets this very high standard, and then she says, therefore I have no bhakti at all. And she's totally convinced that she doesn't. So in this way, the pure devotees, they apply a very high standard of bhakti, and they see I'm not on that level. And in that way they can see themselves as very fallen, although they are very exalted. So don't think necessarily yoga maya is interfering there. It's just a mood of applying a high standard. Your second part. Yeah. Yeah.
But still he's putting himself lower
than yeah. Yeah. Because although he sees the Lord face to face and he's in a better position than other living beings, he doesn't take any credit for that. That's the Lord's causeless mercy. You know, that's not like due to any personal credit. That's just the Lord's causeless mercy. Somehow or other. Although undeserving, causeless, still, the Lord gave him the mercy, and what to say about that? But he's totally unqualified, actually. That's how he sees it. Jnana.
Mark, we read about Sanatan Goswami and Rupa Goswami and how they're getting the Lord's association through their austerities. But for us to perform those austerities, for us to get the Lord's association,
so Rupa and Sanatan, they set an incredible standard of devotional service, very austere, hardly eating, hardly sleeping, and sleeping under different trees and this and that, and impossible for us to follow. We might as well die. Well, I think that there is, for according to Kaladesha Patra, there is a different challenge, right? So for us, Srila Prabhupada has set the challenge, right? And by emphasizing preaching, right? How can you be in this movement and ignore Prabhupada's emphasis on preaching? Yeah? So that's our austerity, because preaching is austere. Yeah? Sometimes they sent you in the meatworks. He also went. He did the canteens. The smoko. Yeah. What, you have to what?
You're the petite
Yeah. No, I think I think actually, collectively, I think that sometimes you get this culture where, you know, we play the game, who is the most humble, you know, who is the most humble game, you know, and it's like, so, I'm so fallen, no, I'm more fallen, and you're so exalted, and that kind of game. I think, let's not play the game now, let's just say, collectively, right, we can do something great. Individually, we are all small, right? Where are the Hanumans, you know? We are the spiders, we are the small, somehow or other we're here. You know, like in my case, from the beginning in spiritual life, they asked me to do service, which I didn't want to do, right? Actually. They asked me to manage a restaurant. I was 3 days in Vrindavan, and then the restaurant manager had a problem, left, and I was the restaurant manager. I didn't want to do it, but what to do? Okay, surrender. But in my mind, I was like, why do I have to do this? But I did it. Then I became guest house manager as well, because they thought he's doing the restaurant well. I hated the guest house, but I did it, right? Then they thought, oh, he managed the restaurant and the guest house quite well. They made me manager of the whole temple, general manager. I was very new, but said, oh, he can manage everything, right? And I hated every moment of it, right? So anyway, did that for so many years, and then I came to Australia, and then you took me out on paintings, and I hated every moment of it. Right? And except, you know, your association was nice, but the service I hated. So then I came back to Mayapur, became involved in the Mayapur Samadhi, and I cried day and night, why do I have to do construction? It's not my thing, you know what I mean? Oh, poor me, do I have to do this? And then after I did it all, then I became president of Vrindavan, and then I was so stupid in my dealings with people that I got shot, and then in the end, you know, I get glorified for everything I've done. He did the samadhi, and he was, you know, he did all this service. But the truth of the matter is, I all along actually didn't want to do it. So we're getting a lot of credit. And this movement and Prabhupada's program offers us opportunities, and then we glorify each other, and together we can do something nice. So I think humility, if we get too much into, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, yeah. Then you get, Prabhupada did not pay much attention to that. Right? I'm so fallen. You know, Satsarupa Maharaj told Prabhupada that he was nothing. You know? Prabhupada said, you're not nothing, you're something, but you're not what you think you are. Okay? That was the answer to someone else said, I'm the most fallen, and Prabhupada said, you're not the most of anything. So, like that, I think another aspect of humility is to be sober. I think so. Just be sober. If you get too much in, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, I'm so fallen, then we're losing humility there, in the humility game. Soberness is part of humility also. What time should we take the break normally? 12 is now. 12 is good, huh? Yes, there's a bit late. So we take a break then.